Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, it is the Redman Puck, fucking hell.
Running issues.
Wow, incredible. 11 years, everyone. I'm Paul Mitch and Sam Walker, Chris Bajak joining me for what has been a stellar start to the podcast. We're going to be talking about the brilliance of Mohamed Salah. We're going to be taking a couple of kickoff questions, one of them pertaining to that, and one of them talking about James Milner. We're talking about how the season's going so far. How it hasn't quite been the car crash that was predicted by some. A little look back at the weekend and a little look ahead as well. Mainly just a chance to just talk about Man City and what's going on there, which is really fun, I'll be perfectly honest, at the moment. As ever, we are live with the podcast, so if you're watching us live, you can join us in the comments section. You've got anything you want to discuss around the things that we discussed, then please do. If you've got any questions for us, we'll get to them a bit later on. But yeah, don't forget the podcast is always live on a Tuesday morning, so if you want to join in, then you're more than welcome to. Gaia Curtis Beggs asks us the first kickoff question. FSG, I'm having a real struggle talking this morning. I don't know what this is all about. If FSG were to give Mo Salah a contract worth $500,000 per week, could that be a possible changing of the status quo, allowing us to accommodate the wages and therefore the potential signing of the likes of Haaland and Mbappe, or would Mo just be the exception to the rule? I think it definitely opens that up as a possibility, doesn't it? Now, I don't know that it makes it any more likely that Liverpool will buy another. I think it probably makes it slightly less likely that we would add another really good forward, because effectively you're doubling Mo's wages, which is like having two of our top bracket players if we went to $500,000, which no one's saying we necessarily are, by the way.
For me, I think that Mo Salah has proved to me, I don't know about how you guys think about this, we spoke loads on these shows about hypotheticals and, you know, well, we might sell Salah and we'll get Mbappe or we'll get Haaland, and I've just kind of realised that Mo Salah is like in that same ilk of how he looks after himself as, you know, your Ronaldo's and your Ibrahimovic's, you've got to put him in there, I think, as well. About he is an elite player who, you know, he's got Homer Simpson handprints, muscles that I didn't even know existed under his arms, where I've just got...
We all had a biology lesson this weekend.
You know what
I mean?
Was that about? Yeah. Like, he's a machine. He lives so clean. He's a perfect example of a footballer. Like,
he's a perfect example of a man.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, isn't he?
Superb human being, father, husband, everything, isn't he? So I think to answer the question, I think he's probably the exception. But if we're going to give him $500,000 a week, I don't think it would be to open up the possibilities in the future. It's just because we want to give Mo Salah what he deserves, or what we feel he deserves, to stay at this club and be what Cristiano is when he's 36. And I think he can be if he wants to be. So I don't think it's really as black and white as the question sort of could suggest. I just think Salah is just a machine getting better.
Yeah, I think it potentially could. We've also seen this happen where Liverpool have had players on top wages, and then what you need to do is go and have a reset down the line, which is, of course, it's not a guarantee that because you've got that bracket that you need to fill that bracket, but it does add to that possibility. I mean, look, to follow on from Sam's point really, Chris, what we should be focusing on is making sure Mo Salah's here for another 4 years, because I can't see how he's going to be a worse footballer in 4 years' time.
No, he's getting better every season, as far as I see it. He's definitely improved over the last year from where he was. He's more impactful than he was. He's more involved in the play. He's tracking back more, I think, than he was. And I wasn't one of these lads who thought he didn't track back either. I've just been so impressed with him. It's almost like Mbappe's not better than Mo Salah.
No.
Haaland's not better than Mo Salah. So, why are we talking about him?
Yeah. You know what I mean? He's just aging. That's the only reason.
Age is it. And I'm like you. I think he can go 5 years.
If Lionel Messi didn't exist, because there was, I think it was like Amazon put a tweet out yesterday saying he's got more goal contributions since joining Liverpool than Neymar's had in that time. And everyone de facto says that Neymar's the third best player on the planet. Is it not just Salah? And that's my thing about that. If Messi doesn't exist, you'd be, because they're freaks, him and Ronaldo have been freaks for the longest of times, you would be like, you would never even consider a world where you didn't want Mo Salah to be at your club forever. It's mad how that, like, there's a weird, I don't know, disconnect almost there. Like, Messi at Barcelona, you do everything in your power to make sure that he doesn't leave, because why would you want him to leave? Because you're not going to buy anyone who's as good. You're definitely not, you can't buy anyone who's better.
The flip side to all of this is, and Sam's absolutely spot on, it's age. I've just said then that Mo Salah's better than Haaland, he's better than Mbappe, but in 3 years' time, will he be? Mm. And that's the question. And my guess is probably not. He'd probably be very close to them, but they might be better players in 3-4 years' time.
Yeah.
And that's it, isn't it? For me, what you've got, and it's really sad that I have to talk like this. Everything else, if you want to increase someone's wages, everything else has got to increase as well.
Yeah.
The commercial side of things has got to increase, the stadium size has got to increase, because as it currently stands on our model, you can't really do it with just paying him now without increasing everything else. And that's the plan, remember, as well. You know, and Liverpool aren't going to go, nah, let's just leave the commercial deals here, we're fine. That's not what happens in capitalist society. It's just more. And as you're a football club spending more, as Amy Winehouse knows, you're going to need to spend more money.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what you're going to have to do. And if we do want to compete long term, and let's say FSG just want to sell the football club, well, the best way to sell the football club and make the most money is to pay better players, to keep the better players here, to win more trophies and sell. Well, so it's speculating to accumulate, isn't it?
Yeah, and either way, it's about their whole business model. It's set around the value of their entire portfolio. Yeah. So they need Liverpool to be worth more money, and to be that, you have to maintain at the very least.
And Liverpool are worth as much as they are because of Mo Salah being at the football club, by the way, as well.
Yeah. And I think with Salah, there's only one thing really missing from Salah's sort of, you know, collection of honours and things like that, and that's that sort of Ballon d'Or, or European Player of the Year. Although I'm not sure after seeing Jorginho win it means that much, but I think the Ballon d'Or does. I think Ramos potentially put a stop to that, you know, fair play to him, because he won the European Cup that year. But Liverpool win the European Cup, I think Salah does win the Ballon d'Or because of just how impactful he was for us. But looking at the way the season's shaping up now, I don't think Ronaldo wins it at Man U, even if he scores 30 goals. I just don't think Man U will achieve that status. I'm not sure Messi will at PSG. Mm-hmm. And I think he might win it this year for his exploits at the Copa America. But there's an opportunity now for Salah to just romp this season, win one of the two major honours, maybe even the European Cup, because I think that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
And then win the Ballon d'Or. And that is the icing on the cake for him and Liverpool, because for us to push the echelons higher, like you said, we're going to get the stadium, we've got the revenue, we've got the Nike deal. It's to have a real best player in the world. And obviously, Van Dijk didn't quite get that, did he? But I think Salah's got that opportunity now to take that this year.
And I think there's something to that. You know, we were talking on the Final Word show, which is streaming on the RedmenTV.com, by the way, if you want to go and watch that, about him making sure you're making headlines as well. And the taking his jersey off thing and giving us all the biology lesson, it's a very, you know, he does it himself. You know, it was pointed out, wasn't it? He's like 3 yellow cards and all for taking his top off. But he becomes the photo. You know, he and it's a popularity contest winning these things a lot of the time. You know, you've got to be in the public eye, and you've got to make sure you're at the forefront of everyone's minds when it comes to voting time. And Salah being that, and having looked at the goal return, because we did a feature on the Reds News Roundup show last week or the week before, when we looked at the 100 club and the players that are in there, and the only there's. And that's why I think him being in like the fourth or fifth fastest to 100 goals is more important than just being in the 100 club, because there's lots of players who are in the 100 club, like, who've scored more goals than him, but they've played six times. Like Lampard's played like 660 something games and has scored 200 and something, 270
goals. Just to caveat that, just one very small point is that the only reason why Salah's below Henry is because he played 13 games for Chelsea. If he scores against Brentford, there'll be 100 league goals for Liverpool in less games than Henry did for Arsenal. So that weird period there actually has knocked him down a place. We would be even higher.
Yeah. And the thing of it is that that list becomes a list of the greatest players to play the game in the Premier League. And that's where Liverpool have got a shit or get off the pot kind of situation with that, is because, look, you can sell them and you're going to get a load of money for them, or you tie them down and you get, not only do you get the best, one of the best players on the planet and possibly the best player in the league, which we can have a little chat about, you're then also you're setting your place at the top of the food chain as well. Because, and this is the, that's the next, that's your point a bit, I guess, Chris, is what happens next? Do you have to go back to £80,000 a week and then you're building them up? You know, because there's definitely a merit to doing that, to having like the bonus structure again, because that's how Liverpool constructed where they are. But there's also something to be able to turn around and go, and it wasn't a one-off. We're not a flash in the pan. The clubs have this. You know, for Matt Letizia, he's on 100 goals and he was Southampton's biggest player. And when he's gone, he's gone. And that Southampton star gone for the time being. It means that Liverpool have got that situation where, and like Man United have been doing this. Okay, cool. Well, whatever. Who's around? Well, we can pay you what you want and we'll just continue there.
And that's the idea, isn't it? But it's all part of the business plan. It's not as simple as we're just going to do it today.
Yeah.
It's all in the planning for a year, 2 years, etc., to understand the finances of the football club and whatnot. The fact of the matter is, you know, I believe Salah is one of the best players in the world. I believe he is the best player in the Premier League, and we'll come on to that later on in the show, of course. And I believe he's worth the money. And I believe he's going to fire us to trophies.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's worth the money.
Yeah. It's like anything you say, you know, it's what else he's bringing to Liverpool. And we were joking about it on the final word about how, like, he's just playing like the complete footballer now. And he's going, well, if you want me to justify what more I'll do, well, I'm going to go in this team of, we've no individual standout star. We've got some really good players, but I'm going to actually make sure that I am, even in that environment, the clear best player, so that no one's got any complaints about what happens when I get paid more money than everyone else, I think.
I think the players as well. Understand that now, because I'd probably say over the last few years there's been a bit of an argument. You know, I've been a Mane fan for a year and then I've been a Salah fan the year before. I think now the players all know, in terms of the forward line anyway, that Salah's the man.
Yeah.
I think Mane probably knows that now. Salah knows that. There's not that strange little underlying competitiveness.
I think Salah knows that it's important though, because it means that Salah doesn't have he's not got a chip on his shoulder. Yeah. Because, and I think we've seen a more magnanimous Salah as a result. I think he's laying people in, and look, he gets loads of assists, by the way. So again, this is a bit of a cheap narrative to be like, well, he's dead selfish and blah blah, because he also gets like 10 assists a season as well. But it feels like he's playing in more for the team as well, and also getting his just desserts in terms of what he wants from it.
Yeah, 100%. He's playing like a captain, isn't he?
Yeah,
it's the first time actually felt like Salah, he doesn't lose the ball. Like the last few years, he's lost the ball here and there. He just doesn't lose it. Now he plays the right pass, holds it up. Some of the touches he plays off the long balls where he's got his back to the ball.
It's a point we never picked up on the final word show, but Mane's normally the out ball from the goal kicks because he's really good in the air. But that, particularly at the weekend, Chris, we used Salah so much.
Salah does this mad little touch where the ball's behind him and he flicks it forwards in front of him and stuff, and then he's straight on at the defender. And I've not really considered it, Sam, about him not losing the ball. But when he does, it's now a throw-in to us or a corner to us. Like, that's the positions that he seems to get himself in. Like, yeah, you're right. He very rarely loses the ball now. It's interesting.
Rather than us jump back to Salah, just do it. Do we believe that he's the best player in the Premier League?
Personally, I think he's the best forward in the Premier League. I think Virgil van Dijk is now the best player in the world. I think Messi, yeah, but I think now he's moved to Paris. I think there's questions there now until he'll throw that form into them and they'll be ridiculous at some point. But Virg, look, he's walked back into the team this season with half a knee and one other good knee. He's all over the place and he's just on another planet to any other defender. I mean, Chelsea have to play three at the back and two DMs to match that. We've got our fullbacks are 20 yards further forward again, you know, and we're still conceding less goals apart from in Chelsea and City. And it's
Thiago and Hendo doing step overs in the opposition box.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous how I just think Virg is just on another platform to any other defender. And I think his impact in our team allows Salah to be great as well.
Yeah.
And so my personal choice is I think Virg is the best player in the league. But if we're talking forward, anybody apart from Virg or forwards, Salah's out there on his own. De Bruyne, great player, but Salah's stayed fit and consistently delivered. He's in a little bit in and out, hasn't he?
The Virgil stuff's interesting because I did a recording with James Allcott's channel for his Dream Teams show, which are going out at some point in the future. But I said that about Virgil. I said it's because we feel like the best player in the world has to be a forward, because we've been like conditioned to think that. We don't. It's almost like you go, Virgil van Dijk's the best player in the world, and you go, oh, but he is.
What does he do wrong?
He's 6'4". He's lightning quick. He can score. He can head. He can pass the ball anywhere on the pitch. You know, yeah, he can't dribble the way that Messi can do, but Messi can't do the thing. There's things that Virgil can do that Messi can't do. So, go on, Chrissy. Salah.
I think he's the best player in the league. I get every point that Sam's made, but I'm not sure if you lose our front three, whether we're finishing third in the league. And that's the we've not seen this team without Mo.
Yeah.
And my guess is that it's not great, to be honest with you. I don't think we could afford to lose as many forwards as we lost defenders and still compete at the top end of the league.
Yeah.
And I think Salah and everyone else masked that injury just as much as the centre-backs who came in.
Yeah.
So for me, I think he's more impactful. I think you take Salah out even, I'm not sure we're in a title challenge. And that's probably... I do believe that if you'd have taken Virgil out last season and that was the only injury, I think we'd still have been in a title challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Yeah. No,
I suppose it'd be interesting to see if we just lost Salah, what it would look like. If we had sort of Mane, Jota and Firmino hypothetically available for most games, whether that would be enough...
It's the fear factor.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I don't think you can argue with either, to be honest. I think it's personal preference.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we probably sat here after Christmas and I'll go, nah, lad, Salah scored 40. I was chatting shit. It's Van Dijk. Yeah. It's Salah, it's not Van Dijk. But right now, that's just
equally, we might have only still conceded one goal.
Yeah. And everyone's saying, Alisson is clearly the best player.
Yeah. Well, and he might be, you know.
Well, to the point, you know, we took between 5 and 7 goals out of the team from a centre half last season in Virgil van Dijk and all the aura and all the bits and pieces. You know, what we don't know is like those game, that run of losing 6 games at Anfield, would we have lost them if Virgil van Dijk was in the team, because Salah was in the team. And he had a little struggle at times at points of that. Yeah, you know, what a great conversation to have.
Which one of our
the best player in the league, either Virgil van Dijk or Mo Salah. I'm sure.
What I will say is, I think the difference between Virgil and the number two centre back is much bigger than the difference between Mo and the number two forward player.
Yeah,
I think that there is a huge gulf in class between Virgil and pretty much everybody else. And so someone was saying that Rudiger's the best centre-half in the league now. It's interesting.
Yeah, right. Well, no, but again, people do that, and this is why you end up into these pointless, tribalistic, banterous arguments on stuff, because you only really watch your football team. But I also, we've got enough backing that the side and what they've won as well adds up to it. Because, again, from doing the Dream Teams thing and picking like some of my favourite players over the years, and with a large Liverpool sort of lean towards it, of course, this 2018 to present day Liverpool has ruined them for me. It's made all my picks so boring, because in years gone by, I had loads of these heroes. I thought they were brilliant. I thought Sammy Hippie was just incredible. It's just not by comparison to he's probably not as good as Matip. You know what I mean? Like, that's the reality of the situation. Or maybe as good on their absolute prime, but he's not as good as Virgil van Dijk.
Your top 11 Liverpool players of all time is pretty much the league and European Cup winning teams.
Yeah, exactly.
With Kenny and Stevie thrown in. Yeah. And that's about it.
Maybe Suarez, if you want to be harsh on Firmino.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're making cases. There's the outstanding individuals of those times, and then you put a bit of nostalgia in there, but by and large, you're hard pressed not to pick the Liverpool side of late, because we've never had this many of this many world class players in one side. We've never, not just that, we've never had this many players who were the best in their position in world football as well. Because whether you think Virgil's the best player in the world, he's definitely the best centre half in the world.
I think we've got six. Players who are the best in their position.
And then there's arguments for the jobs that Thiago and Hendo were in there as well, because I wouldn't swap Hendo for anyone in the world for our job and our team and our leadership package. The thing is, in the Premier League as well, I would only pick one player from every single player available in the Premier League to come into our starting 11, and it would be, I'd probably have to get Ronaldo, Kane, maybe Lukaku, probably not Lukaku, Ronaldo or Kane, and flip a coin, because that centre forward role is the only questionable thing. I wouldn't swap anyone for Mane and the rest of the squad, the rest of the first team, not one
you're
player
dealing
would come
in
to our team.
Small percentage.
Very small. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're swapping anyone for anyone at this point. No, it's interesting. Really good stuff.
Good question.
Yeah, thoughts? Yeah, very good question. Thanks, podcast, and that is the podcast. Andrew JB says, would you rather complete a lactate test strapped into a harness attached to James Milner, or try to run down a narrow alley, a bit like our left wing, with James Milner tasked with stopping you? Basically, which Wilfred Zaha do you want to be? great question. I think that's a hell of a game. That it was called Gauntlet in Gladiators, wasn't it? From ITV Fest, where you had to go from one end to the other, and you had to get past the string of gladiators, getting down like an alley gate, like side alley that leads to that main alley behind terraced houses. If you're any middle class, you probably won't know what that is. But you know, and they're all locked now. So if you didn't get to smoke in them when you were in your teenage years, you've probably never seen one. But yeah, you're talking 3 feet wide, maybe, and trying to get past James Milner. The only way I think you'd ever get him past him is to somehow convince him to duck slightly, and then you're like leapfrogging him. But
I think you're gonna have to go with the bull rush, to be honest with you. Yeah. Just go low and just keep those legs driving. You know what I mean? But I can't imagine it's gonna work.
It's what would you rather do, I suppose, isn't it? But you know, having spent years doing the tunnel of death after heads and volleys and that and shooties, I'd rather go with that one. I'm not getting strapped to James Milner for 45 miles running at like 100 miles. No, thank you.
Mate,
I'll just take the kick.
I'm going the harness. And I'm going nose to nose on it as well.
Can we video it? No.
I think it'll be dead fun. Just strap in and him have to carry me for 45 miles or whatever it is. Like when you've got a baby on your chest. That's what I want, one of those big baby
harnesses. That's not hard for you then, though, is it?
No, it's not hard for me at all.
I would be quite funny, though, seeing me being the big spoon to James Milner.
I
think
he'd have both of you, you know, still completed.
Would he have to pivot quite far over?
More fun than going in an alleyway with him, to be honest.
I'd be like his exosuit, like an alien's. he'd lean back and I'd go, and then he'd be like, that'd be weird.
One of those war machines from Avatar or something. Like he's just sat in the middle. Paul's just there with these massive guns.
How long do you think you'd last on the strap to him, though? Hardest? How long
it's
do you
not
think
me.
Before you do
I want to. This is the no, true I'm lactate you. Test. If he can carry me and do a lactate test, and he does that and still beats everyone in the Liverpool squad, he's playing till he's 70.
Yeah. I think the alley thing's just good fun. As long as it ends with a handshake, you know what I mean? Like at the end, I'm not getting past him. There's just no chance, James Milner. I'm not without some form of injury to me. I'm retiring from that, and probably not gracefully.
You'd have to do the Ronaldo at the weekend where you just go down before you even get kicked, just and then take the kick on the way down. That's the only way you're going to get away with that.
Yeah, definitely. What lactate test would you take? Which Wilfred Zaha would you want to be? Let us know in the comments. Right, we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about the season so far. The weekend just gone, and the weekend looming. After this very short break, I spoke to Athletic journalist James Pearce last week to get some extra insight into the stories in and around Liverpool Football Club. That show is every week on theredmentv.com, but there's a clip from that. The prognosis seemed positive. I think that was the general takeaway from what Liverpool are putting out there.
Yeah, that's certainly been backed up by the people I've spoken to, that the surgery went well, and that now it's, you know, all steam ahead in terms of what will be a long rehab. But you know, I think the fact that Liverpool in their statement said that there was a confidence that he would play again this season is a really promising sign, and I think that will really kind of energise Harvey as well in terms of his rehab, knowing that, you know, this season is far from over for him. It's a horrible injury. You know, you only have to see the reaction of the players on the field to see how much it affected them. But, thankfully, we've seen before players come back. You know, you think of Andre Gomez, what he went through, and he was back within 4 months. Now, I think that's probably, you know, at one end of the spectrum. This may take a bit longer, but, hopefully not too much longer. And, you know, I think also the fact that he's so young and the way that anyone who knows Harvey Elliott, you know, the way he goes about his business, and you know, just, you know, how much it means to him. You can guarantee he will be doing everything he possibly can to get himself back out there. So yeah, hopefully, and probably maybe, you know, March, April time, we'll see him back in a Liverpool shirt.
Yes, we've been doing transfer insight over the summer, but we've got some journalistic insight coming each and every week on the redmentv.com. So if you want to go behind the scenes and find out more and sort of, yeah, get behind the stories, as it were, then yeah, make sure you sign up on the redmentv.com. We've got loads of amazing features. We've got bonus Redmen shows that are a lot like this, Around the League podcast and Reds News Roundup as well, midweek, but also, yeah, the Final Word show and that, and of course, a whole amazing section filled with documentaries and features, and hopefully we've got some amazing interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks as well, but some to come on that, so make sure you follow our socials. Yes, Chris Pajak. I asked Tom before I was writing the agenda, I was like, what are we talking about? And he went, can you talk about like how everyone's heads fell off and everyone felt it was going to be really terrible, and it's actually been all right,
glorious.
Yeah So nice. I thought, yeah, let's talk about that now. We're in a situation where you don't want to feel like you jinxed anything or whatever, of course, because we are very superstitious people as people and as football fans. But yeah, Liverpool have come back, and I'm so pleased to say this as well. They've come back exactly how I expected them to come back. So there's almost an added satisfaction in some regards to that as well.
Yeah, I think I said it, and I think a lot of people said it last season. People got bored of understanding and saying the reasons that Liverpool were crap, or the reasons why Liverpool were crap, the injuries, the no fans thing and all that type of stuff. And after a few months, everyone just got bored of that and wanted to move on.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop it being true at any point. And right now we're seeing that everyone was right and that everyone was wrong to forget that they were right in the first place. And that's it, isn't it? I mean, you know, what I was interested to see this week, and we've not talked about this anywhere actually, is how going from a big European Cup atmosphere to a Premier League atmosphere was going to affect them. And there's two ways you can do it. You know, Crystal Palace could have been a bit of a downer, but then I was thinking, actually, you'd probably just made up to still be playing in front of fans, whatever the atmosphere is. Yeah. And the atmosphere was good enough that it made a difference, I feel, at the weekend. Couple that with the fact that everybody pretty much that you want is fit. We can still put out a first 11 that's very, very good. And you've got a great Liverpool side. And I think a lot of it is down to the transfer window and how people feel coming out of the transfer window. I don't think, I'm very much not on the FSG outside of things. So if you are and you're watching this, correct me if I'm wrong here. But I don't think anybody on the FSG outside thought we had a bad side.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they thought... they weren't backed enough and that they wanted extra players.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who were not FSG out, and I'm purposefully not saying FSG in because I don't think it exists.
Yeah.
the people who weren't FSG out also thought we needed depth. And actually the entire fan base realised that Liverpool have got a great side. It's just we differed on opinion of should Liverpool have done it? And actually, we didn't even differ on opinion. We all thought Liverpool should have gone into the market.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is, Liverpool have got, I believe, the best first 11 when everyone's fit in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that now. And we're now enjoying our football because there's no worry over the transfer window. There's nothing that can be done now. So everyone's just enjoying the footy again.
I think seeing Divock Origi having a positive impact on the team made a big difference to the psychology as well last week, you know. And in fact, we've now faced our first test of two games a week and we've come through. Particularly, you know, it gets forgotten because we've been so good for a couple of years that the European hangover is meant to be a thing. Like, you're meant to drop points in the league. One of your two is meant to suffer. And look, it's only the first go at it. So there'll be time. We'll draw a game.
Yeah.
We'll probably draw a Champions League game, and maybe we'll draw a league game off the back at some point in the coming months. But I think a couple of those things, I think particularly the Divock stuff, the guy who was literally held up as the poster child for everything that's wrong with Liverpool's squad and recruitment, came in and showed that he's good.
Yeah.
And so if he's the worst player in Liverpool's squad, then maybe Liverpool have got a squad that's capable, you know, at the very least.
Yeah, what's really funny about our squad is we've actually got the biggest squad of the top four rivals, right? The biggest squad numbers wise. It's just certain players, and I'm probably guilty of it at times, well, are just considered they don't count. Like, Origi doesn't count, he's crap.
Yeah.
Defence, midfield, goalkeeper, you know, doesn't really matter too much about the goalkeeper. Defence and midfield, we've got the biggest numbers and the biggest depth and quality out of all the teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just up front. But, you know, I like to use the analogy similar to like you do here, Paul. But if you've already bought a house and you're in a position where you're going to buy a new house, you don't just go on the market and go, all right, I need something with a bit more room in the garden. That'll do. Right, you know, I'm going to invest a little money in that, and then you're stuck with it. Liverpool approach it in the same way we do when we're buying an asset that means a lot to us. They make sure they get the right thing at the right price that's valuable to them. And that's what we will continue to do. We went absolutely berserk when we didn't sign a centre-half. We got the guy in January. We probably should have won the European Cup that year. It, for whatever reason, didn't work out. But in terms of coming back to what you're saying about the players coming in, when you've got a crowd and you're able to dip in players like Ox, Origi, Minamino, you know, who came in the other day, Simakas, Milner at right back, and you've got nine other or seven other really, really good players in the spine of the team, it doesn't make a difference. And that's what we did in 2018-19 and 19-20. Yeah. We're back to that now.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, exactly that. And it's the thing that I think that typifies the season and the focus and what we're... the attitudes towards things, I think where we found the online thing a bit baffling at times. And to your point, Chris, I think is absolutely spot on. There's not a Liverpool fan who doesn't want Liverpool to have more good players. Who would want Liverpool to have less good players? Stupid. It's just like it's one of the most maddest assumptions ever. The chant, the Reds have got no money, but we'll still win the league. I was trying to explain this post-match of how it's a gallows humour, but that's the point, is that you don't cry arse about it. You know, there's some stuff that you just have to get on with. When it becomes so terribly bad, no group of people will go to the barricades quicker and more firmly and more fervently than Scousers. If something needs doing, we'll go and do it and we'll go and get it done. But there are things in like life's a shit house as well. So there are things that you do have to just kind of grit your teeth and get on with. And Liverpool be in a situation where, let's be honest, we've got the best team, the best squad we've ever had, the best manager, the best players, all those things that go around it, all the best culture and all that. To approach this with like, by making a song about it and laughing about it was like when we had Hodgson in charge, and instead of going booing Roy Hodgson and saying Hodgson out and making placards and banners and being knobs about it, we sang Hodgson for England, and we made a joke of it because
we made t-shirts.
We literally made t-shirts about it. Like, you mean, yeah, I wore them on the show. We made deciding Roy Hodgson's future with Mortal Kombat 2 videos.
We did,
but that's the point about it, is like there are certain things that are within your scope of influence. I just love it. It's the best chant ever. It's incredibly catchy. Your kids are singing it apropos nothing. But I think it sums up the whole attitude towards how we deal with these kind of situations. Well,
and that's it, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, and you know, I think for me, and I've always said this, it's about supporting the team, and that's how you show support for the team, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? And what would that do? And I try to sort of think about this. Is like, I was sort of looking down at Jürgen as we were singing it, thinking, I wonder what they think of this.
Yeah, he loves it. I bet he loves it.
I bet he's like, there's the difference. There's the fucking difference between them and every other football club in the world.
Yeah.
Right there, yeah, in the ground. Mane came out and spoke recently about, you know, the love that he gets from the ground. Gini Wijnaldum came out after he left the football club and talked about the love that he felt in the ground, as opposed to what happened online and on socials and stuff like
Salah
that.
Salah did it this week.
Salah did it this week as well. And that's what really matters to them. That's how you take the sort of, you know, the temperature of the fan base, mm-hmm, is what's happening in the ground.
Yeah.
And if the ground turns, you've got a problem, but the ground hasn't turned at all. It's nowhere near turning. In fact, we're enjoying it at the moment more than ever.
But also it's a funny acknowledgement of the situation, is that it's a message in the right way to the owners and stuff, saying, we see you. You know what I mean? We see you and we see what you're doing, and we're not going to kick off about it or anything. We're going to make a laugh of it and joke of it, and we're going to support this for now. But it's not like there's a blind eye turn to the lower level, let's say, of investment on the playing field that's been in recent years. But again, it sums it up for me, because you're dead right. You've got it. It shouldn't be underestimated. You can't. This team, you can go and spend £500 million and not create a team that's as good as this. Because, like, Man City have not won everything since they've had all the money in the world. And PSG haven't won everything since they've had all... And Chelsea haven't won... I don't win everything every year. So that's the kind of reminder of, we've got to, like...
we've got to, there's got to be enjoyment from football, even if it's not perfect. You've actually got to celebrate and enjoy the things, because that, like, you know, there's only so many years on Jurgen Klopp's contract, and there's only so many years in the tank of all these footballers. Everyone is finite, so it makes me so honestly, the pride bubbles up out of me. Being and singing that, because it's the most Scouse thing ever.
Yeah.
To take that kind of that situation and turn it into something funny, and also something that continues to support the team.
And what's funny about it as well is that it's actually not true. In that, the truth is, we all know, like, every single one of the players in the pitch is at the pay rise, like, yeah, big pay rise,
yeah,
and their agents have got a big lump sum out of it, yeah, and so on and so forth. So
it's a bit of a finger to the people kicking off about it as
that's
well.
That's what I was going to say, what it is. And I also think Klopp loves, he's like us, like, we all love to achieve something. We all love a story. Oh, how amazing is that? That kid started with nothing. Look how big his building fame is now. Nobody likes a Tory. Or nobody, you know, when you see these stories online of this, or on the TV, this kid's rich, and my wife watches these programs sometimes, and his dad's a billionaire, or her dad's a billionaire, whatever. It's not impressive. So everything that we do is sort of a mirror image of us as people not everyone, but most of us in the crowd.
Resonates with us, doesn't it?
Yeah. So them achieving something with less circumstances than United, Chelsea and City. And do you know what? Give Chelsea the due. They're the same model as us right now. But City and United are pumping all kinds of money in. And when we beat them, it just makes it better. Like, I'm not sure Klopp would want it any differently. I honestly don't. I think he absolutely loves it and thrives off it, and he gets him out of bed in the morning going, oof, we're 3 points ahead of City, 100 million Grealish, stick it up your ass, come on the Reds. Honestly, yeah, it's like it gets him going.
No, it's true, isn't it? And again, we said this, I was desperate for City to sign Kane. Fucking desperate.
I wasn't there, mate.
Because I love the fact that they've had, he's not, like we said this before, he's not better than Sergio Aguero. He's not. You're not going to score more than 30 goals. So, you know,
I thought he would. That's why I was like, he's going to get 40.
Yeah. But he signs in January, mate, he gets 40 for then.
And regardless, but the point isn't it, because it's City all over. City will outscore you regardless. City are going to score 100 goals this season regardless, but you can't get more points.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a limit to what you can do. And I love the challenge of that. I genuinely, and again, it's just something that lights a fire in my belly of going, I want us to play PSG in the knockouts. I want PSG in the semi-finals of the Champions League. I want to go toe-to-toe with Chelsea and Man City, and I want to do them because everyone expects, because on paper you support the most money supposed to win, and the beauty of football is that that's not always the case. More often than not, they're going to come out on top because the resources are a thing, and maybe there's something to that in the coming years that Liverpool are going to need to enter that next echelon, but that also might be the end of the Liverpool that we know and love as a result.
Exactly.
But also, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. It's not like we've got no money.
Yeah.
Like, didn't we have the biggest wage budget in the league last season?
I think second.
It's hardly like underdog story here, is it?
Oh, God, yeah.
At the same time, like, you know, yeah, I mean, we are in a really strong position regardless, and that's it. Like, Everton's a bad example because they've got more money than everybody nowadays, isn't it? Like, if Burnley were able to do it, like, that's like Leicester winning the league type of stuff, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, but the difference is we've invested in our players who are here. And that's the thing. Transfers don't always mean success. Like, you know, and it's a flip of the coin sometimes on a transfer. Sometimes it's the manager, sometimes it's the opportunity, it's how they integrate in the squad, it's the system, it's everything else. Look at Mo. Going on to become one of the best players in world football, didn't really work out at Chelsea for him. Had a good spell at Roma, kicked it on big time when he came into a system that suited him, was built around him. And these are all the things, like, you know, when I look at, like, Harry Kane, I'm like, yeah, he's going to get goals wherever he goes. I look at Lionel Messi and go, well, he's going to be the best player in the world ever, wherever he goes. But does he make PSG better? That's the question.
Yeah.
Like, the sensible answer is probably with time, yeah, he probably does make them better, but it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, and
Liverpool have invested in players that they know are good.
Yeah. Look, as we've seen it, players' injury, the humans, you can, like, is it Gbamin for Everton, who's basically never kicked the ball for them, every time he gets fit, he does his cruciate or whatever. We had this with Danny Ings, who's gone on to be a good Premier League centre forward, could have been absolutely phenomenal for Liverpool, but just you buy someone and then you get a freak accident can take them out of the equation. There's so many different myriad factors that can get in the way of them being what they are. I love it. I do, and I think the thing about Liverpool is that we love a good underdog story. You're right, Liverpool aren't quite the underdogs, but I like the fact that
compared to Chelsea and City, we kind of are.
Well, exactly, that's the point. Liverpool are doing it in the way they're still doing it. It's hard to talk about this when you talk about billionaires doing billionaire things, but there's a more honourable way to doing it. Again, seeing the growth, seeing the organic growth, seeing the input on and off the pitch and what's been happening. It's been a pleasure to be involved in it and to be embraced as part of it as well, you know, as fans, and, you know, being and having the culture and all that be celebrated around it. It's fucking brilliant.
And we've been built on that as well. I mean, if you look at one of our very first European Cup wins, we beat Rome in Rome. That's unbelievable achievement back in the day. You look at Istanbul, you look at the Barcelona, that's what makes Liverpool Football Club. I know we didn't win the Europa League, but look at the Dortmund game. Oh my God, like, those underdog stories where we shouldn't win and we do is what makes our club. Now, we're not there, we're not that team anymore, but still maintaining that sort of us against the world mentality is clearly something that motivates us. And just to caveat what you said before, I think Ronaldo and Lukaku would be superb signings for their corresponding teams this year. But I think Sancho and Varane might as well have stayed where they were, because both of them are going to do nothing for me for a long time, because they're not improving what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, look, early
to but Ronaldo is. Yeah. I'm crediting and sort of, you know, criticising at the same time. Yeah. He will score loads of goals, but I don't see what Sancho brings to them or Varane. They still keep conceding goals all the time.
Well, we'll see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. One thing I would say just about the football clubs more than anything is, I think City's owners and Chelsea's owners would much rather bought Liverpool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If it was available. And Man United. Because there's two teams in this league that can be both.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the culture, it's got the history, and it's got, you know, biggest football club in England. Genuine arguments for being the biggest football club in England. Now, we all know where I lie on that. It's Liverpool, of course, because we've won more major trophies than them. And we're better right now as well, which is also a thing when you're talking about it. But, like, the others, City, for all the trophies, they're never going to be Liverpool or Manchester United. For all the money, they're never going to be City or Manchester United.
I remember Paul's always said, and I've agreed with you for a long time, City are going to win that European Cup and go boom. I actually don't think it matters anymore. I think they've kind of come back over the hill. I think they will just always be Man City. And I don't know if we're going to talk about it or not, but I think Pepsi in that now as well.
It's an interesting point, because I do want to talk. I want to talk a bit about that. I think, just actually, we had a couple of comments. First of all, we had Holy Moly, who's joined us as a first here on YouTube. If you're wondering what the perks are and that, you can get them. They're listed there, I think, when you sign up. But there's a members only chat that we do on a show post match. It's the fan reaction show, so you can get involved in that, of course, and use the emotes when you're on live streams, which is great. And we had a comment which I will find. Which someone's in there, FSG, Graft Gaming said, I'm FSG and we pay less per win than the top 8 teams and are challenging. It's brilliant business. Added Thiago Jota to league winning squad and now Konate. Exactly. And what Chris said about there is no such thing as FSG in. The problem is that you have this as an online argument. No, FSG, when we say FSG in doesn't exist, it doesn't really, because it's just... It's more like FSG, it's a non-issue rather than it's a FSG. No, there are no FSG fans, whereas there are people who clearly dislike them, but there's no one who are like, oh, great, aren't, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's people rise up to me.
Go, John.
Like, yeah, no, exactly. Like, you mean, thanks, John Henry, you're lovely. Syed Ali with another super chat saying, Celta by Works, look at Chelsea with their loan system, and we are copying that slowly, and if the players are good enough, they will stay, example, Mount. Yeah, exactly. But Chelsea have been Chelsea get thought of as being like the mega money team, and my God, they were very funny few summers where they spent all kinds. But the last 5, 6, 7 years, they have been a lot more frugal with how they've done them. I've got more respect for Chelsea. Chelsea have come through that period now where they changed the game and they've moved on. They've done it for long enough, and they've done it in a more sustainable way.
Well, yeah, now they are more sustainable. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? I think what they did is they closed the gap, went ahead, and
before
then went. FFP, this is unsustainable for the long term. I get the impression that City aren't really asked about sustainability, if I'm honest.
Yeah, oh God,
I think they'll just keep spending and spending and spending. And listen, soon enough, they'll have that League Cup record, fair play to them, but they'll still be nowhere near the European Cups.
Yeah. No, but if you're selling drugs from your ice cream van, you're not asked if you sell the best ice cream, are you? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, the thing about me that's interesting, we'll just kind of come on to the weekend stuff and looking ahead, and Man City in particular. What I think is really interesting, for the first time ever, I think people have turned on Man City a bit. I think your general football fan, your neutral, even though there's not really such a thing, have started to cast a bit of like a new glance on Man City.
Obviously, we've got the WhatsApp group and stuff like that with all the lads and the girls who are contributors to Redmen. And Sam has been sharing them for like a week now, haven't you, of all the Man City things. Now, ordinarily, that stuff I'd show to our Steve, Everton fan, and he'd be like, And this season, he's like, forward them onto me as soon as you get them. And this is the tide turning, because he's now laughing his head off at it, because they've been annoying now, and they're just pricks, and no one likes them. And before it was like, oh yeah, but I hate Liverpool more, and I hate United more, and everyone's just gone, nah, these are just knobheads.
Yeah,
and everyone's enjoying it now from the City
it's
side.
It's that thing of like the fact that it's a bit of a story, and the fact that Pep, you know, Pep coming out and basically saying, "Do us a favour, turn up on Saturday because we're going to need you." Klopp did this in the early days. But we're going to need, that was an exhausting week. We're going to need everyone behind us. Get in early, you know, forget going, you know what I mean? Like, almost like, don't worry about brushing your teeth in the morning. Just get it. Just get straight to ground and get up for it. And we were like, fucking A, Jürgen, we will. Don't you worry, we'll be there. And we were there. And Man City were like, does he actually realise we sell like 95% of our league tickets? We're there, Pep. What are you talking about? Instead of going, yeah, let's go there and give it the all. They're like,
the difference is, Paul, he was talking to a fan base that would go in the game anyway. Yeah, that's the difference. And he was just going, just be there a little bit early, will you, lads?
Yeah, make sure, like, yes, extra, yeah, be extra noisy.
No,
but
worries.
It's because it's a touchy point. It's a touchy subject for Man City fans. It's like if you get someone highlights something that you know you do wrong, and you're extra defensive because you're ready for the fight. It's like they've been defending themselves about the empty head thing for years.
Stu Breen writes articles on it every fucking 3 months. So Stu Brennan writes articles on it. I'm assuming he still does it. I think I blocked him like a year ago or something now. Like, but you know, there was an article I saw in the Manchester Evening News from him that was like, when an opposition fan says this, here's your reply. And it was like 15 things to say back. And
yeah,
I was like,
God,
wow. Okay.
Here's how you defend
it. Loser.
Yeah.
when you've got Danny Mills and Sinclair going on the radio defending you and then just talking nonsense, it's dead expensive to go to the game. They can't afford it. It's a Wednesday night. It's 60 odd quid.
It's a fiver, lads.
Mate, it's 15 quid to go to a Champions League game. They were selling this Wickham tickets for £7 the other day. Like, great. Fantastic. But you've got no excuse to not come. They've been given to, I work in Manchester, and they give tickets to all the schools in Clayton. We've got an office in Clayton. They give tickets to the schools. The teachers don't go. They can't be asked.
I reference it wrestling a lot, but there's wrestling over the years, they do this thing where if they're not going to sell out an arena, they go and give it away. So when they record the numbers, the total attendance was 30,000, 19,000 paid.
Fair enough,
and that's how they do it, so that you know you can, so you can get an idea of the financials. Now, I think some of that might come after the fact from like accounting and all that, but like City clearly don't do that. And football club Liverpool don't do that either. To be fair,
I said a couple of years ago, I found out something for the NFL where they obviously do like a league wide thing where they share the revenues and stuff like that in America. Don't they? What really interesting is occasionally I pay for Game Pass and you get every game. Blah, 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 apart from the ones that are on Sky TV. But what you can get for them is occasionally there'll be a game blacked out that you can't get. And I was like, why is this, right? So the reason is, if you don't sell out your ground, they black out your game so you don't get a share of the television, right? So what they do is they give their tickets away so that they get television revenues from it. What a really great sort of incentive to be able to go, it's the 3 p.m. blackout in England, great. Yep. but you're not getting no television revenues until you sell your ground out first. What a boss way to deal with something like that.
We sell out though, Chris, every single week. So we're the opposite in a sense. I think you said that we don't publish the same. It'd be the opposite. So it'd be 54,000 whatever 100 sold, 53 attended. Cities is the opposite. And that's where this whole notion of, oh, well, we have 95%. Look at the league's nicest, mate. Shut up. Try and get a ticket on our game day. Even with no fans flying in the morning of the game, it's impossible. The day before the game, sold out now. Go to City and get six in each block. They're a small club, and then I don't think they're going to get any bigger. Yeah. I think there's problems there.
They might do eventually, but the point is that, again, they're living through a golden era at the moment. They've got the best manager on the planet, and I would argue that it's Jürgen Klopp.
Trophies-wise,
For the sake of argument, I'm not going to be cheerless about it. Pep Guardiola is as good a manager as you can get, and they've got him, and they've got some of the best players on the planet, and they've got all the money to go and do it, and they can afford to pay the wages, the top wages to get it, and they can afford to write failures off very quickly. They don't need to worry about your 50 million. They're like Angelino, for God's sake. Like, he's good. He's a Champions League quality fullback, and they've two goes of him they've had now, you know, and he'll keep going back out and he'll keep going and playing at a Champions League level. They can afford to do that. They go, oh, whatever, we'll get rid of him for a bit. Whereas, like, again, if we were like Man City, Naby Keita would be nowhere near Liverpool's side. Yeah. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, Bobby Firmino has a poorer season, you move him on and all this kind of stuff.
Think about the goalkeepers. I was thinking, this is the best example of it. Liverpool bought Karius for $4 million and went, fuck, okay, we can't do that again, 65 on Alisson.
Yeah.
They spent 30 on Claudio Bravo and went, we'll just string another 40-odd for Emerson.
Who knows?
Yeah. That's the difference, isn't it? Yeah. Liverpool can't think like that. They can't wear.
But what
they've
done now is that in buying Grealish, I think it's brought more eyes towards them. But, you know, good and bad, because people love Jack Grealish, don't they? But also, they're now breaking records. Whereas their argument, their CEO or whatever was coming out a couple of years ago.
We only buy 65 million players and 10 of them every season.
Exactly, but that's the point. They're going like, Liverpool have broken the record for Virgil van Dijk. And he was basically going, here's what all our rivals have spent. They've spent big. We haven't done that. And it's like, you're right, because you've got four £50 million fullbacks instead of one £70 million fullback or whatever.
And to be fair, like, apart from Grealish, right, I've actually always kind of admired the players that they do buy, because they're never your Upper Mencanos or anything like that, are they? This year was the change, wasn't it? Where they were looking at Kane, they were looking at Grealish. Yeah. Like, no one thought Ruben Diaz was going to be up there with best centre backs in the league. No one thought Laporte or anything like that. You know, they've always kind of gone their own way on transfers, whereas Man United just go, it's fucking blindingly obvious. City have never kind of done that, have they?
Exactly to the point of, like,
but it has changed.
To bring it back to Footy Manager, it's like Man United search sort by value. By the most expensive ones. City at least go into the numbers and work out what it is they're roughly looking for. It's interesting, it's fascinating, and again, there's some real big touch points, and the fact that you've got their head of their supporters group going out on Sky's bought and basically correcting Pep Guardiola over this point. And it's like, if someone's, you know, we've all been there, you do something and you go on the defensive, and you should just go, oh yeah, shit I'm dead. So it's like, if you ever have an argument with your missus about, like, what you don't do in the house, and you go, I do, and then you don't do it and you get caught not doing it, and you go like, oh no, I do that all the time, and like, I make the bed, of course I do, and then you come in and you go, didn't make the bed there. Oh, it'll be fine. I'll get away with it today. And then she comes in.
You know what my wife did the other week? She made half the bed.
Fair play. That's amazing. That's pettiness on the next level, that.
I was dead proud, to be honest with you. I was like, that's glorious.
Making the bed. Let's talk about shitting the bed, right? If City lose the next two, or draw one and lose one, they're going to be, like, let's just say they get beat. I think they'll get beat by Chelsea, and then no, anything could happen at Anfield. But they could go into the international break 9 points behind three teams. Not behind one team, three teams. Yeah. That's game, set, and match, mate.
It's interesting. You know, they've just drawn with Southampton. They've got Wickham today, of course.
45-0.
Yeah.
What age group?
Wickham under-19s against City.
Yeah. They travel to Stamford Bridge in the 12:30 on Saturday. They've got PSG away on the following Tuesday, and then us on the Sunday, and then they host Burnley after that.
They beat City, they beat PSG, they lose what? To us.
They beat.
You think they beat Chelsea at Chelsea?
Sorry, they beat Chelsea, they beat PSG, they lose to us.
Cool. But it's what I think the Chelsea thing's interesting in all this, of course, because
and obviously they beat Wickham.
While we're mirroring results with Chelsea, and the Echo are writing articles about like what happens if they remain level on things at the end of the season. Fuck off, the Echo, by the way.
I know
exactly. And the fact that they we're talking about this like five games into the season needs to get in the bin. But
isn't it mad that like every result's been the same? Not even just like
week
goal
by
score,
week, as well,
week
yeah.
by week. It's just insane.
Yeah,
I was fuming when Rudy scored. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. I was like, obviously they went
back. I mean, we're saying this, but it isn't, because they've played more home, they've played more away games than us, so yeah, to the point. But the it's fine. The thing, I think Chelsea being in it helps us as well, because I think it's another one of those situations where loads of people like Chelsea because of the London thing as well, so actually makes the we start to look like the lesser of all the evils. Everyone's drawn eyes to the big name, and because they didn't spend the big money and all that kind of stuff, does definitely help our case. But I think that's a fascinating run for City in particular, because you know that they're going to trounce Wickham, and they'll be able to change heavily for that as well and still do the business. But that the Chelsea thing, would you rather City win that, or would you rather Chelsea win it?
I was always I think City need to be Chelsea, but I actually think now, I read something off, is it Henry Jackson, something like that, is it on Twitter, I forgot what his name is, he's a good lad, he wrote any sensible Liverpool fan should want Chelsea to beat City. We know City can like be a special team and go on a mad run. Like I think this is Chelsea. I think this is going to be like this all along. They don't look fantastic, but they get results. You know, they're a very functional side. I think City could just absolutely destroy 15 teams in 15 games. So if we can put the negatives in them like we did in 1920, and their just heads are gone, if they get beat by Chelsea or even draw with Chelsea, and then we beat them, they're out of it. They're not catching three teams 9 points behind. It's not happening.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. We've seen this, but we were here this time last year and everyone was writing City.
Yeah,
off.
But they had like two games in hand.
No, I know. But they had no pre-season either. They had a lot of things going against them as well last year and managed to still string it together. I mean, they had no competent challenge either, which is also a thing, of course. But I don't know. I'm weird. I'm bullish about this, Chris. I'm not asked for Chelsea dropping points, because I think if obviously we've got to go and beat Brentford, but I want a situation where Liverpool are just pulling away from everyone. But I do. I also don't disagree with that notion of just kill someone off if we can. If we can lean towards Man City being killed off as early as possible, then yeah, it's less less stressful.
I'm kind of torn. Like, there's a part of me that wants a draw and them both to lose points. There's a part of me that's like you that just wants one of them out and then make it a two-horse race or whatever it's going to be. But there's also a part of me that goes, someone's going to need to beat Chelsea. Like, beat them. Like, you know what I mean? Not like, whereas I actually think that it's tough. It's the same with City. Like, they draw or they win. They lost to Spurs, didn't they?
Yeah. They've lost already.
So the first game of the season. But they can come back from that. I think someone needs to dent Chelsea's confidence. And I'm confident that Liverpool can go and beat City. So, we're 3 points ahead. If we beat City, we're 6 points ahead of them. Like, I'm not going to be greedy and say, let's be nine. I'd rather City be three behind us and them six behind us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And just have a little bit of a buffer to both teams. So maybe City to win, Chelsea to take that first defeat, really hurt the confidence a little bit. And then us to beat City and go six ahead of them anyway.
There's a psychology, I think, where it doesn't really matter. Because someone's dropping points, and that's the most important thing at this point. Because we've just got to continue to win. But I think because of all those little things we've been talking about Man City, starting to see the first cracks between the manager and the fan base and all that kind of stuff. And they've obviously spent the money. And now, the immediate reaction I had the radio on after our game, it was Trevor Sinclair on the radio, and immediately went, because they didn't buy a striker. So because they didn't spend £200 million on a centre forward is the reason why they're not kicking on. I like the fact that I'm happy for City to continue to be the problem. Mm. And how do they psychologically pick themselves back up again if they are out of it, and if Liverpool and Chelsea continue to just chug away and pick up results?
Can I just also add that if City were to beat Chelsea, City can quite easily beat us.
That's the problem. That's what I was just going to
say. So we're going to be level with them all.
Yeah.
Still, after this sort of run of games, provided we win everything else. So if City beat Chelsea, they're three behind us. If City beat us, they then just go level with us. And we're, and then if Chelsea win, they just go level with us as well. So yeah. Actually, like,
I look at Chelsea and I think to myself, they're a fantastic functioning side, but the goals are basically,
you've got no backup for Lukaku.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be like, in the end, I think United and Chelsea are going to fall foul of everything. Just funnels through the two strikers, and if there comes a point where they dry up or they don't score, I think they worry. Like the whole idea of Chelsea's wingers being amazing is the numbers are there to see. They're not that influential. I think we're their City, which is why I want them out of it as early as possible. And even if that means a draw and a loss or two losses, is they can lose. De Bruyne hasn't even played this year yet. He's just like, he's in and out, he's had injury problems, and they still wipe the floor with a few teams. If he gets going and starts performing like he did last year, we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. If he gets going and they're 9 points behind three sides or two sides, they've got a real problem, because you will see Pep crying every week and, oh, they're going to win the league, and the fans will be like, oh, why are you being so negative, mate? And yeah, Gallagher will be on and it'll be great. Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the mindset that the title, it's a three-way title race, and look, we've been here before, and we've been here with Man City and Chelsea before, and Chelsea weren't quite at that level, and they get to December, I think, and they drop off a cliff. I think they beat City actually in that spell, but then they're out of it. I genuinely think it's those three teams. So the more points that all of those teams lose, the kind of better, to be honest. Yeah. And then you just bank on Liverpool doing the business. But it could be funny, because it could end up being one of those mad seasons where you draw all the, we just keep drawing against each other, and it's where you do the business elsewhere that ends up matter, which is a shame, because Man United, that could keep Man United very much in the conversation, because I think they're going to beat everyone else.
Yeah, don't know how though, watching them, jeez.
Yeah, but they've just got,
they're like that, they're just like that, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Moments, aren't they?
Yeah. Ben Pryor with the 449 Super Chat, welcome back, Ben. Wickham will eliminate City, you heard it here first. Go ahead.
Hey Ben,
love the
fair play.
Love
barely to be on the drink, Ben.
You put a lot of money on that, mate, if I was you.
Ben's on the aisle at half 11.
By the way, can we just say, again quickly on bets, the best moment of the game, Saturday, was Milner absolutely emptying Gallagher, and everyone around me go mad that the ref didn't book him, because everyone lumped on Milner getting booked.
Yeah.
I was made up because I didn't.
Yeah. Oh, funny stuff.
I got 2-1 odds at half time on Mo Salah having 4+ shots in the game, right? He'd had 2 on target, and I got 2-1 odds, so I just stuck a fiver on it. Like,
did come in?
Yeah, of course I did.
There you go.
He had like 3 shots and scored the goal. Second half, I was like, it was just so blindly obvious. I was like, that's a fucking decent little bet.
8-1
Milner
was.
Yeah.
8-1 he was. Oh, you would have thought that was guaranteed. I mean, he should have picked up 7 yellow cards during that game, shouldn't he? Like,
yeah. The master of the dark arts, James Milner. Right, brilliant. I enjoyed that. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always good to have a little laugh at the misfortune of Liverpool's rivals, which is a good thing indeed. Hang on. We got one more super chat here. Sketch, this coming. Nailed it. Chelsea will drop points. I don't think they've been playing better football than Liverpool. I'd much rather City lose 3 points. Yeah, that's the one thing about it, is just that last thing on this, is that City are a known quantity. We know, as we've said, City could just go unbeaten now for the rest of the season. They'll be right up there. Chelsea should, but they haven't. They still haven't quite, you know, we haven't seen a full season of Thomas Tuchel. So it's trending that way. And they're reigning European champions, which you can't take away from them at all. But yeah, there is definitely that, isn't there? You know, knowing that City are a known threat, if we can get them out of it, then that'd be amazing. But yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see. Who cares? Just let them all just drop points and let's just win every game. Yeah, let's just win every game. Agreed. Yeah, boss. Right, there you go. That is the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for this one. If you want more from us, then do check out the redmentv.com, our streaming service. We have got the Reds News Roundup show coming tomorrow. Bit of a deeper dive on all the stories around Liverpool. The final word, if you want to catch up and have a good old chat about the magnificence of Mo Salah.
Well, yeah.
The final word, streaming, two final words, for, final word after every game, streaming on redmentv.com. Go and check that out. And if you like doing what we're doing and just want to support the channel, then yeah, best way to do it is through the website. So yeah, that's amazing. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back with a watch along for Norwich in the League Cup. Do check that out. If it's Tuesday, if it's Wednesday, go back and watch it. Hopefully, I don't know. Whatever. We'll see you all soon. Thanks, lads. Ta-da. In a bit. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project,
there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.